Go ahead, folks, and open your Bibles to Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4. It's good to see you this morning. I'm grateful that you're here. Appreciate your prayers in the last few weeks as we're trying to figure out my foot and that whole situation. But a word of explanation, any foot of mine is under tremendous stress. So I feel like it's a wonder it's made it this long. But actually, I'm doing well, and I love you and I appreciate you. You probably don't recall the name, but I'll just say a couple words and you'll get it. Iron Eyes Cody. Iron Eyes Cody. You will remember him as the Native American who found himself at a canoe about 20 years ago in a very famous commercial as he's canoeing down a polluted river filled with garbage. He never says a word during the commercial, but he won several Emmys for his portrayal. Not a word did he say. But as he's going down in that canoe, do you remember the scene where he looks out over the river with a lone tear coming down his cheek? He was a famous storyteller and one who was booked constantly for his ability to stir within crowds certain emotions. One of the great stories that he told is a story that I have used many, many times in the course of my ministry. But I never really knew where the story came until I did a little research and found out it came from this Indian actor. The story goes a little something like this. There was a farmer coming home from the fields during a cold and blustery day. As he made his way to the main road on his way to his home, the wind blew hard and it seemed to get even colder. And as he turned the corner of the road, he saw in front of him what looked like a walking stick. But upon closer inspection, he found out that it was a snake that had froze solid. He reached over, and as he did, the snake looked up to him and said, "Shh, friend farmer, pick me up and put me in your coat or I shall surely die." Now the farmer thought about that a little bit and finally reached down and took the snake and put it underneath his coat and buttoned it up and continued to walk towards his home. And as he drew closer and closer to his home, the snake began to thaw, and as it thawed, it squirmed around underneath his coat. And the farmer was glad when he saw the gate to his house, where finally he opened his coat up, and he picked up the snake. And upon putting it down, the snake lashed out and bit him on the throat. And as the farmer lay dying, he looked at the snake and he said, "Why? Why did you do that?" And the snake continued wriggling away when it turned around and said, "You knew I was a snake when you picked me up." What I'd like to talk about today is the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness, as is presented in Luke chapter 4. Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, left Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, where for 40 days he was tempted by the devil. He ate nothing during these days, and at the end of them he was hungry. I'm always amazed by this. He went 40 days, and then he got hungry. I cannot in any way relate to this. I'm a big proponent of fasting, And I fast every day between meals. The devil said to him, if you are the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread. And Jesus answered, it's written, man shall not live on bread alone. And the devil brought him up to a high place and showed him in an instant all the kingdoms of the world. And he said to him, I will give you all of their authority and splendor that's been given to me, and I'll give it to anyone I want. If you worship me, it'll be all yours. And Jesus answered, it's written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. And the devil led him to Jerusalem and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. If you are the Son of God, he said, throw yourself down from here. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you to guard you carefully. And they will lift you up on their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. And Jesus, tired of this exchange, I just added that myself, said, it is said, do not put the Lord your God to the test. And when the devil had finished all of this tempting, he left him until an opportune time. What was being offered to Jesus was something Jesus already had. You understand that, right? All the three things that were offered him, Jesus already had. The snake hissed when it offered him kingdoms. And Jesus already had kingdoms. And the snake hissed when it offered him authority. And Jesus had all authority. And the snake hissed when it offered Jesus power over nature. Throw yourself off of this temple spire, and I will overcome gravity. And Jesus said, I got control of that already. So are you interested in having that kind of power? The kind of power that was offered to Jesus? Well, I think an easy answer for me would be no. I mean, I've never have coveted the power that I see displayed by Jesus. I've just been in awe over the fact that it was given in love and that I'm a recipient of that. But many of us, all of us, at times in our life have delusions of grandeur. When presented with an opportunity to gain control, we all take it. We all take it. Most of us want the ability to exert influence into the course of our own lives. Simply put, we like to be in control. A significant question is, but what route are you willing to take in order to get that control and power? You see, the scriptures say that the devil led Jesus up to a high place and showed him in an instant all the kingdoms of the world, and the devil said to Jesus, I'll give you all their authority and splendor, for it was given to me, and I'll give it to anyone I want to. So if you worship me, it'll be all yours. It's crucial to know that the devil was telling the truth, you know. The devil was actually telling the truth. He had that to offer. Being the prince of this world, he had that to offer. He didn't lie. At least this time, he didn't lie. He was able to offer it, and Jesus could have bit. Jesus could have said, okay. But what was being offered here is more than simple power. What is being offered here is splendor. That's a word that is used in the text. He offered Jesus first place. He offered Jesus a royal throne. And Jesus at his weakest, Jesus after going more than a month without food, wandering in the desert, through all the deprivation that that makes, found himself in front of the one who could give him all of the things his body needed, right then. No wonder the offer was made of turning rocks into bread, because Jesus could have used some bread. Jesus could have used some splendor. We kind of like to think that we're looking pretty good. Studies have showed that men think they're much better looking than women would say. I mean, some of us are just kind of put together, you know. Guys know that. Jigger knows that. Joe, he knows that, Joe. I mean, we tend to have an inflated sense of self, and we kind of like that. We work our entire careers to get that. We don't like it if somebody tries to challenge us in that. And in the temptations of Jesus that we've just read, there is a similar set of temptations and lures that the devil offers us. And maybe if I could list just a few, we might have the insight to not pick that snake up. Steps to worldly power. The first one is splendor. The devil said, I'll give you splendor. I'll give you glory. I will reward your fight for the limelight. I will help you establish yourself as somebody that others would admire. We all tend to want to think of ourselves as standing out from the crowd with beauty or intelligence or wealth or ability, strength, all of those kinds of things. And sometimes thinking that highly of yourself can get expensive. Like the woman who went out and bought a dress. She bought a beautiful dress. Beautiful dress. And she put it on. She went home to her husband. And she said, honey, do you like this dress? And he said, it's a very dangerous question. So he took the wise part and he said, yeah, I like it. It looks really nice. How much was it? Exactly how much was it? Well, the woman was terrified, for she knew how much she spent on the dress. And finally, she said to him what it cost. And he looked at her and said, have you lost your mind? He said, you know we don't have that kind of money. What were you thinking? And she said, it looks good on me. I don't think I've ever looked this good. I don't know what I could have possibly done but buy this dress when I did it for you. He said, why didn't you just say, get behind me, Satan? And she said, I did, but he said, it looks good from behind too. The devil offered the Son of God splendor. Splendor. You see, the point is this. What the devil offers us is this. He says that I will give you the power to exalt yourself. I will give you the first step to your own personal power. And Jesus already had it. And they move quickly on to the second. Luke chapter 4 and verse 6, I will give you authority. I'll give you presence. I'll give you position. Every knee shall bow to you. You'll be master over all you survey. You see, the devil hissed in the ear of Jesus. And said, with me, you'll be in charge of everyone on earth. Are you vulnerable to that kind of approach by Satan? At first, I thought, no, I don't need that kind of worry, you know. I don't need that kind of drama in my life. But just think about all the energy that most of us expend trying to manipulate those people around us to get what we believe is our right. Think of all the things that we obsess about. Think about all the things, the quirks and features of our lives that we're known for to the ones who love us most. When you think of all the silly things that you have done your way. Folks, this preacher is a hero when it comes to the idea of silly things I like done a certain way. I have got everything positioned next to my recliner within hand's reach. I have designed it in such a way that I don't ever have to leave the thing, barely. And with my foot not being so good here recently, I've had a little, you know, step up on that. Honey, she's downstairs. Honey. Sure am thirsty. If only I was married to somebody who cared enough for me to bring me an iced tea. She'll tell me about her back, and I'll say, yeah, but mine's newer. Idiosyncrasies, the weird little things we do, the way we like our clothes, the way we take care of our cars, the way our shop looks, all of these things have to be done a certain way. Because we believe if we cannot have control over everything, we can at least have control over the things in my kingdom. I will have control over my kingdom. So, men, I got to tell you how hard this makes it on our wives. That we live a life with a laundry list of things that have got to be done our way. We bought the tempter's lie that we have control of everything. Not even close. Not even close. Exalt yourself, exert control over the world. Everything exists to serve you. And finally, if you worship me, it'll all be given to you. You know, there's something kind of seductive about following somebody other than God. There's something kind of seductive about following somebody other than Jesus. And what I mean by that is when it comes to living on this earth, the things that have power over us can only get so much of us. Know what I mean? Your boss at work only owns a little bit of you. The government only owns a little bit of you. We can keep our secrets, you can keep your secrets, and when you come home at night, you take it all back. But not so with God. God is the one who is the penultimate. He is the one who has the ability over not only what we do, but how we feel and what we think about. And to lay ourselves out in front of a God like that is the ultimate relinquishing of our power. And yet that is what God demands. In fact, that's even what the devil demanded. Remember in the second temptation? He says, everything you look at, I'll give to you. Only don't worship your father. Worship me. With one little deal, it could have been all over for us. Before Jesus' ministry even started, it could have stopped right here at this encounter with the snake in the desert. The greatest icon of evil, Adolf Hitler himself once remarked, "What luck for rulers that men do not think." What luck for rulers that men do not think. So having presented the case that the devil makes for us, the grabbing of our glory, the wanting of our worship, the coveting of our love for God, I'm reminded of something so simple that works on the side of God. Let me describe it to you in just a couple of minutes. Worship. This is what we do on a Sunday morning. Think of how impressive it is that we emphasize the very things that God wants us to emphasize. We gather together, and it is a litany of hellos and hugs and kisses and all of those kinds of things. There's a lot of laughter. There's a lot of everything going on. There's teasing. There's joking. There's all of that. Class teachers have a difficult time getting started in their classes. Hard to get a song out because you folks are talking. And all of that is so difficult, but it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful and wonderful. You know what we say when we gather together with this family? We say that I'm no longer the center of this universe. I wouldn't give you anything for my church family. As the evangelist of this church, I only ask one thing. That we give as much credence to the idea of growing this family as we do maintaining it. How many people would love to have what we enjoy every Sunday morning? They just don't know it's available. And then we sing songs. We sing songs. My dad was not a Christian. My dad was a rough old cob of a guy. But he went to a number of my sermons. And he would just show up at church. And it made me nervous, so nervous. But I'll tell you what happened during singing. He would turn to the page. I never heard my dad sing in my life. But he would turn to something like "Just As I Am" or something like that. And he'd stand there looking at it like this, and the song leader would be up there with one of these. And everybody else would start to sing. And I always fascinated at this because I would look over at my dad. And he'd be going, "Just as I am." And it was the sweetest thing you'd ever see. This crusty colonel in the Air Force. A guy I wouldn't have given 10 cents for living with him my whole young life. He got singing. He got why we do it. He fell into it. He embraced it. And I love the fact that we sing. I love the fact that we sing. I love the idea that we sing songs. It's the only live performance you can afford all week long. It's a beautiful thing. And it really does say, it's not about me. It's about us. We only sound good when it's us. And then we take of the Lord's Supper. We remember the act of Jesus. We've been remembering it our whole lives. But here on earth, this meal has been remembered for over 2,300 years. This same meal that focuses in not on our righteousness, but on the gift of God through His blood and His body. This Lord's Supper tells us that we're not the middle of the universe. And the preaching happens. The prayers happen. We file out, waiting to come again. It's a wonderful thing we do as the church, isn't it? See, I didn't grow up in this. I didn't grow up in this at all. I'm a kind of huggy guy, but I just learned it. I learned it at church. You just can't afford going around hugging people unless you're in church. The lady serves you your drink at McDonald's, and you go, bring it in here, honey. Oh, that's a good lady. Oh, a little tighter. No, you'll go to jail. You'll go to jail if you do something like that. You can only get this here. You can only get that with us. Evil says that to gain power, you must exert control over your world. But that's not what Jesus says. If you would see real power at work through you, then deny yourself and surrender control to God Himself. That is the message of Luke chapter 4. And when the devil had used everything that was in his bag, he went away to fight again, ultimately losing that battle on the cross. Let me just leave you with this. The one thing about temptation is a little of it goes a long way. Temptation for us is a programmed ritual. People who use drugs, people who are addicted to pornography, people who found themselves exerting an alcoholic lifestyle, they plan what they do. They develop places to drive, always excusing themselves, saying, "I'm not going there, but I'm in the neighborhood." And if anybody asks them why, they'll say, "I don't really remember why. I'm driving through these streets." The thing about temptation is a little goes a long way. Temptation usually starts in a small way. It's just one little area. And so one little area, we reach out and we touch it. And then we realize some of it got on our hand. And we try to scrape it off. Now it's on both hands. And you try to get it off of you, and it smears down your clothes. And soon everything around you is contaminated by what started with just one little decision. One little decision. The power of temptation is ultimate if it were not for Jesus. Do you want genuine influence? The real kind of power to promote, flourish in your life, then humble yourself, surrender control, worship the Lord your God and serve Him only. You know that passage is in Deuteronomy chapter 4 that Jesus referred to. And watch God's power flow to you and through you as it never has before. I leave you with the temptation of Jesus. In Luke chapter 4, verses 1 through 13. Let's stand and sing.